Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello, I'm Matt Parker.
I'm Steve Mould.
I'm Helen Arney, and this is another episode of A Podcast of Unnecessary Detail, a place where tiny details can grow and flourish until they get interesting enough to talk about on a podcast.
This episode is all about being primed and ready, so I'll be talking about a prime number that I received as a gift.
I'll be singing about the largest prime number that we know about at the time of recording.
I'm starting to think maybe I didn't get the memo, because I'm actually not talking about prime numbers.
Oh.
It's your choice, Steve.
Yeah, your choice to be wrong.
Well, I guess we'll see about that. Bring on the detail.
Steve, what are you primed and ready for?
I'm not primed and ready for anything. I was born not ready. But I want to talk about animal defense, animals that are primed and ready. So imagine that you're a honeybee. In fact, imagine you're a colony of honeybees. And you've made all this honey, and you want it. That's your honey. But then a hornet comes along. It's a scout hornet. So it's come along looking for stuff, and it likes honey, and it can smell the honey. So it's come along, and it's having a little sniff around. It takes some of your honey, and then it flies back to its colony, tells all its mates, there's loads of honey over here. They all come over as well. Take all your honey. And if you're a European honeybee, the chances are your colony won't survive. That's the end of your colony. The issue is your stinger isn't long enough or strong enough to get through the exoskeleton of the hornet, the scout that gets sent. So European honeybees are not primed or ready, but the,
oh, wow.
The wild Japanese honeybees, they have something different going on. So the hornet scout turns up. And the first thing is, you know, there'll be some honeybees on the perimeter. They'll spot the hornet there. And they'll waft some warning pheromones into the hive so that all the bees inside are now primed and ready. They know there's a hornet outside. But they let the hornet come in. That's the first thing they do. They let the hornet come in. They're all ready for it. And on the signal, I don't know what the signal is, they all jump on the hornet. This big pile of them, it could be hundreds of bees, just pile onto the hornet. And they start to vibrate their flight muscles. And, you know, it's like if you do exercise, you obviously produce heat. It's the same for the bees. When they vibrate their flight muscles, it produces heat. And the cool thing is, these honeybees can withstand temperatures that are 2 degrees higher than temperatures that the hornet can withstand. It's about 46, 47 degrees centigrade. And so they just heat up this big ball. It's called a hot defensive bee ball. And it just gets... And so after about an hour, the hornet is dead. It can't survive that temperature, but the bees can. Like in reality, there'll be some bees on the inside of the ball that die, but the colony survives.
I'm almost glad the bees in the middle die, because that's a really awkward hour of just the wasp waiting. All the nearby bees are like, yeah, sorry, we're...
It's super awkward, isn't it? Where it's like when you're on the tube. If you fart on the tube, you're stuck right next to someone. It's just awkward, isn't it?
You have to wait for one or both of you to die, and that's it.
Yeah.
Steve, I'm just waiting for you to tell me that this is leading on to something else. This has just been like a little Aesop's fable, a little story about, oh yeah, there was a bee once and a hornet and la la la. Are you actually trying to tell me this is true?
No, it actually happens. And so the scout is dead, doesn't get to return to the colony of hornets. The hornet doesn't find out about this store of honey.
It feels to me like if the hornet didn't have to go back with like proof of concept, I assume initially the hornets just went back and they're like, hey, I saw this incredible hive. And they're like, we don't believe you. Have you got any honey to prove it? And so now, like if the hornet could just go back, like see it, and then go back and get its mates, you'd be fine. But the hornet's like, oh, I've got to go in there and get some honey, or no one's going to believe me
when I get back to
hornet. Yeah. And so they've got to risk going in solo just to get everyone else on board. I feel like that's poor strategy.
Yeah, you'd think that the hornet, as soon as it got a whiff of the honey, would think, right, I need to avoid the hot defensive bee ball. I'm going to fly straight back now and get all my mates.
But Steve, they've never found out about the hot defensive bee ball because they've never come back. So they don't know about the hot defensive bee ball. They don't know it exists. Do you know why? Do you know why I feel like this is made up? It's because it sounds like a bee-based retelling of Jack and the Beanstalk. But instead of throwing magic beans, you've got a hornet throwing itself into a hive. It just definitely feels like a made-up story. Like, and then you're going to come out with some kind of moral in a minute, which is don't steal someone's honey or watch out for hot bees.
It feels like a story like a teamwork consultant would tell. If you all work together and you can withstand hot temperatures while doing repetitive tasks, we can kill the wasp together. And wasp symbolizes lack of productivity in the workplace.
It's definitely a teamwork.
You can tell none of us have had real jobs. We have no idea.
So long.
The expression works well in a team. That sort of epitomizes members of a colony, doesn't it? No team works better than a colony. You know,
there's no bee in team.
There's no bee. It's unfortunate. They've got an extra gene, the wild Japanese honeybees, and it's like a thermostat. So if you go too hot, the bees die as well. So it's going to be this 2 degrees hotter.
It's a very small window to hit. 2 degrees.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's why they need this thermostat gene. I imagine it's like if it gets too hot, they stop vibrating their wings. But if it gets too cold, they start vibrating their wings again.
I'm just trying to work out that evolutionary pressure for this, and the first time that a hornet went into a Japanese beehive and all of the bees collectively decided to give them a big warm cuddle like Olaf from Frozen. I love warm hugs, and the hornet's like, hooray, I love Frozen too, let's hug.
Because they're vibrating their flight wings, presumably the step before that was just fly at the hornet. Everyone fly at the hornet. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess try and push them off or chase them off or whatever. But then they found that warm hugs are the answer.
Yeah.
That's an absolutely.
Warm hugs.
I've got to say, that is a way to introduce science to 5-year-old children. that could be an extra on Disney Plus. I'm going to pitch it. The warm hug theory of evolution.
Do you want to hear some more weird defense mechanisms from nature?
Yeah.
Let's do some animals. But first, just a plant one that I thought was really interesting. Diefenbachia. It's a cane plant. And it doesn't have horns or spikes or it's not stinging or anything like that. But it has these idioplasts. They're specialized cells that when they're bitten into, they pop. And inside the cells, they've got these really spiky crystals, calcium oxalate crystals. And so they burst into the mouth of whatever's bitten into the plant, and they spike the inside of your mouth. So it's causing like little abrasions. And there's also like an enzyme in there as well. It's a bit like reptilian venom. And then it can get into your skin because of all those little crystal spikes that are in there. It can paralyze temporarily the mouth of the animal that's eating it. And it's happened to humans as well. So the nickname for the plant is the dumb cane, because it stops you speaking.
That is wild.
And you may have experienced a mild version of it if you've eaten a kiwi. So kiwis, I don't know if I eat quite a lot of kiwis. And it has these cells, you know, and you break them up and there's these idioplasts. and inside is this thing that hurts your mouth. And, you know, if you eat too many kiwis, it can hurt your mouth.
Judging by the sound of it, and knowing humans, we've either turned it into a medical aid or a delicacy.
Yeah, it's like, ooh, this really hurts my mouth. I mean, it's the same with hot food, isn't it? Like spicy food. So yeah, with animals, I don't want to go over the ones we already know. Like, you know, there's the lizard that shoots blood from its eyes and all that sort of stuff.
Like in Frozen.
Like in Frozen.
No. Like in Frozen 2, the salamander that shoots fire.
Okay, that is closer.
And now Matt's just embarrassed himself because he hasn't seen Frozen 2.
I haven't seen Frozen 2.
You haven't seen Frozen 2?
I've not seen Frozen 2.
Do you know what? For a long time, I thought Frozen 2, not as good as Frozen 1. Frozen 1's obviously really amazing. Yeah. Frozen 2's all right. But because I've got kids, I've now watched Frozen 2 100 times. And now that I fully understand the plot, it's actually great. It's arguably the better movie.
That's like the extreme version of it takes a little while to get going in the first season, but bear with it. You're like, no, look. Once you've had two orders of magnitude of views, it really starts to come into its own. Yeah.
All right, let's just do a quick rundown of animals that I found interesting. The dormouse. The skin on a dormouse's tail is really loose. So if a predator bites down on the tail, it can just slip out. It leaves the skin behind.
It's got like a saggy tail.
The skin is easy to pull off.
What?
On a dormouse.
It's like a sock on a baseball bat.
But yes, that's the perfect analogy.
Thank you.
And then the mouse just whips its tail like a baseball bat at the intruder.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't do that. It just runs away. But then it's left with just a bony tail. The tail is just bone then. Yeah. Which then either falls off or it chews off. So it can only do it once in its life. But it's a useful trick.
So it doesn't grow it back like a lizard or a gecko growing its tail back. The mouse is just like, no, well, no tail back. Now.
That's that now. That was my one shot. The northern fulmar is a bird. The chick, so vomiting in birds is a common defense, but the vomit of a northern fulmar chick is really sticky and it can actually clog up the feathers of the predator to the point where the predator can't fly anymore. It actually kills the predator. So a predator bird flies in, it gets the sticky stick on its wings and dies because it can't fly. It's absolutely horrific.
That doesn't feel very efficient because surely a predator that is landed and cannot fly away right next to you is it's a bit self-sacrificial, that feels. What, do you sort of vomit and run? And does it have an effect quick enough?
I don't know. Well, no, it's chicks. They're very defenseless.
That might be like evolutionarily helps your entire species, but doesn't particularly help you.
Yeah. It's an interesting one. Well, I mean, Richard Dawkins would disagree with that because of his selfish gene view of things.
Richard Dawkins and I would disagree on quite a lot of things, so that's fine.
I want to talk about the slow loris. You know the slow loris? The massive eyes, really cute primates.
Yeah.
You know the one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, adorable.
In defense, it puts its hands up by its head and looks to look like a cobra and hisses like a cobra.
Wow.
And it produces a poison out of its armpits. And if it's really threatened, it sucks the poison off its armpits and then bites the predator to poison the predator.
This is the improv group version of animal mimicry.
That's just throwing everything they've got at it. There's nothing left in the can at that point.
Yeah. All right, final one. I want to see if you can guess what the defense of this one is. The boxer crab is also known as the pom-pom crab or the cheerleader crab.
They grab a piece of fluffy coral and punch their predator in the face with it.
Uh-huh. It's not bad. It's close.
They stun their predator with a incredibly choreographed, synchronized display of athletic ability and flips.
Helen was closer, amazingly. They grab a little sea anemone in both claws.
Oh, that's not nice.
And sting the predator with the sea anemone. So they carry him around. So it's good for the sea anemone as well because they get a free ride everywhere. So good.
C-R-A-B, you are never going to eat me.
I would like to share a prime, as in a prime number. I think we all saw this coming. Which I was primed. And I was not ready. I think that's where I'm going with this. So by primed, someone sent me a prime. I got an email one day and someone's like, hey, I made you a prime number.
Oh.
I'm like, I love my viewers. They are the best.
This sounds very standard so far. This just sounds like a day in the life of Matt.
I probably get sent a prime number more weeks than not. And so this was quite a nice prime. It's 2,112 digits long. It starts 11111, and then there's like, I'm eyeballing it. There's maybe 10 to 15 ones, then some sevens, then a 1648, bunch of zeros, and it carries on. They're just over 2,000 digits in this prime number. And to be fair, I have not verified it's definitely prime. I talked to them about how they verified it, and I was convinced it is a legitimate prime number. And it's not like a record-breaking prime number, of course, but it's big. And the reason that they sent me this prime number, and the reason I was more pleased than almost any other prime I've ever been sent, is if you put it into a text document and you adjust the width of the text document so each row is 33 digits, it forms a 33x64 grid of digits, which, if you zoom out a bit and squint, is a picture of me.
No.
So it's Matt Parker the Prime.
I need evidence.
Look at that. That's definitely me.
That is actually convincingly Matt Parker. If I saw
that's
that.
That's definitely
Matt Parker. I even know the headshot that is taken from.
That's quite an old headshot,
isn't it?
If anyone does want to physically see this with their own eyes, it is in the podcast show notes. So you can click the link below and you'll go and see it.
Yep.
Can I just get this straight? This works because there are so many prime numbers out there that some of them will inevitably, if you get the line breaks right, look like something else.
Yes.
There's a lot of repeating digits, like in the background. It starts with a lot of ones, for example.
Yep.
And so you can see it's very uniform in terms of digits. But then at the end, there's a bunch of just random digits that don't seem to form part of the picture. Do you see what I mean? It's almost like you've got a stain on your shoulder.
So the section of the number Steve's talking about seems to be all eights and zeros. Because to make a picture out of digits, you've got to start with the original picture, work out how dark or light each, let's say, pixel, big chunky bit is, and then work out which digit gives you roughly that level of shading. And for my shoulder there, eights and zeros seems to fill it in nicely. But then suddenly at the end, instead of eights and zeros, you've got 5, 6, 7, 7, which does stand out a little, as Steve's saying. If you're blurring your eyes to make the image work a bit better, then that's an obvious defect in the corner. So you're both completely correct.
It does also look like someone's added some kind of door frame on the right-hand side or some kind of streak of fours down the side.
Oh, yeah.
Now we're looking at it more like some kind of magic eye picture. It's starting to make sense because now I can see like the ones and the sevens are the pale sort of tones.
That's my
face. So that's the background and that's your forehead and then more of your forehead and then a bit more of your forehead. And then there's nines
in the shadows and stuff.
Yeah, this is from the time you had...
Yes, when I had hair. Or when I had eights and zeros, as they say in the biz.
Yeah, I mean, I was just trying to find a way to say it, Matt.
It's now more of a zero than an eight, if I can.
Yeah.
But this is a bit like, you know, when you look at a photo that you've never looked at really closely before and you realize there's something lurking in the background. I'd never realized until right now there's a wall of fours. Just leaning into the background of the shot.
Those digits at the end, they've given me an idea of how it works, but I want to hear from you
What's your theory, Steve?
Well, my theory is, without thinking about prime numbers, you just use some algorithm, as you say, to shade the picture according to the pixels, right? Using the numbers. And then you search for a prime near to that. And so you're then just editing those last few digits. So you're looking for a prime nearby, and that just edits the last four digits, but the rest of the image is conserved.
You're absolutely correct.
Yay!
So you just paint by numbers, and then Jesse Mitchell, who sent this to me, could have just said, oh, I've got you a number. And I'd be like, thanks. Yeah. But the fact that it's a prime number, you're like, oh, wow, a prime. That's special. However, you're right. Once you've got your number, you just shuffle around nearby by tweaking, in this case, the last four digits, until you get to the nearest prime. The question now becomes, how hard is it to find that prime? Because like Helen said, there are a lot of primes. Mm-hmm. But how dense are they? If you've got a 2,112 digit number, how many guesses is it going to take before you, on average, will find a nearby prime number? So basically, how pleased should I be with this gift? And there is something called the prime number theorem, which tells us roughly how dense or how many primes there are for any certain size of number. Mm-hmm. And so it turns out if you're looking at numbers of a certain size, so let's say the starting number, this picture of me before it was primed, was just some number n. And you go, right, numbers that size, one in how many of them are prime? It turns out it's roughly the natural log of n. So the prime counting function, which tells you how many primes there are below a certain number, the first version of that that people discovered was just the number divided by the natural log of that number. I should point out, we've since got better measurements, but for sufficiently big numbers, just using the natural log is pretty accurate. So if you take the natural log of kind of the starting number, or I just rounded it up to the nearest multiple of 10, then you end up with about one in every 4,863 numbers at this size will be prime. So there's a couple every 10,000. Yeah, which is why only you only have to change four digits. Yeah. And as a fun rule of thumb, because the natural log of 10 is pretty much exactly 2.3. It's 2.30 and some stuff. As a rule of thumb, if you take any number and you count how many digits it's got, mm-hmm. and you multiply that by 2.3, so you double it and a bit, that's the probability it's prime. Now, obviously, if it's even, then it's pretty obvious. So numbers of a certain number of digits, the number of digits times 2.3, that's the probability a number of that size picked completely randomly will be prime or not. So if you, let's say you've got a number with 100 digits and you don't tell me anything else about that number. You go, I've got a number with 100 digits. And I'm like, well, 100 times 2.3 is 230. So I know numbers of that size, one in every 230 of them will be prime.
Oh.
So I know, knowing nothing else about the number, other than it's got 100 digits, I know there's a 1 in 230 chance it's prime. And the reason it's 2.3 again is because you're using e. So e to 2.3 equals 10. And I think it's crazy because on one hand, base 10 numbers, it's a bit arbitrary we use base 10. But this works in any base because you're using the natural log. What I find really bizarre is fundamentally the fraction of numbers, the percentage of them that are prime, is related to e.
Yeah.
So this crazy number, e, which is normally, you know, exponential growth and all these other things, also tells us the fraction of numbers which are prime numbers, and we can use it to give us an estimate of the probability an arbitrary number is prime or not. And I think it's just, prime numbers are weird, is the moral of this. Even ones that don't look like my face are weird.
They're the weirdest ones, though.
They're the, if anything, yeah.
Do you have a sense of how long it took to find that image for the person that sent it to you? Like, each check, how long did it take and how many checks did they have to do? And, you know, any sense of that?
Yeah, so they didn't do the naive way of testing a prime number. It's too big to check its factors. So they performed a bunch of different types of primality tests on it, which is a whole other conversation, but they used, like, there's a Fermat primality test, there's a Miller-Rabin primality test, and so they put it through a bunch of these. I've just checked, they didn't say how long it took them, but they performed 200 different checks on it, and so just from the way they're chatting, it's about a day's worth of work, under a day. It's not something that's taken weeks, but it's probably not something that was instant. Probably a couple hours, but that's just me guessing from personal experience.
So it's like, how long did it take Michelangelo to paint the Sistine Chapel?
Wow.
And would it have been quicker if he'd just done it in prime numbers?
Just do a prime number. As far as we know, the first person who did this was someone called James McKee, who made a prime number which looked like the logo of Trinity College at Cambridge. They were giving it as a going away gift when they were leaving Trinity. Their going away gift was a prime number, which is lovely. However, this was a couple of decades ago, and computers weren't as powerful then, so they couldn't do what Jesse did to find my prime number by just changing a few at the end, because then you've basically got a number which is not in any way helpful for checking if it's prime or not. When James was doing this 20 years ago, they had like their picture in the prime and then a whole load of zeros, like a couple hundred zeros, and then a one, and then they tweak some digits in the middle, because they knew that the number they had was one more than something with loads of tens in its factors. And so the fact that they knew it was one more than such a big composite number actually made it easier to check using computerized tests. Whereas now, computers have gotten way faster, tests have gotten better. We can now hide the numbers we tweak anywhere, and we don't need all these safety zeros to make it one more than a very composite number. So one of the many benefits of increased computing ability is now we can have much more artistic picture primes.
Yeah, it's really important, I think.
Another practical application of prime numbers in computing. You're all just jealous that I've got a picture prime.
A little bit.
I do need to get an updated one with a more accurate amount of hair.
Yeah. So fewer eights and zeros near the top and a lot more from the nose point downwards.
Oh, yeah.
Can we just turn the whole thing over and just call it a new self-portrait?
Turn it upside down, you mean?
Matt's just done a 180 with his entire facial hair.
Well, my facial expression has just done a 180.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, Matt, I see your prime, and I raise you prime and ready, because I have a song about a prime number and I'm ready to sing it. So this is a special type of prime number that I know Matt knows all about, and Steve, I think just by osmosis, knows about. And it's a really big one.
Yep.
It's huge. It's the biggest. It's so big that Mexico's going to pay for it. It is the actual biggest prime number that anyone has ever found. Matt, what kind of prime number is the biggest prime number?
We're talking Mersenne prime.
I did know that.
One less than a lot of twos multiplied together.
Yeah.
Yeah, Steve.
So Mersenne primes are always in this form of 2 to the power of a number, p or whatever you want to call it, minus 1. So this prime number is 2 to the power of 82,589,933 minus 1.
Please tell me the song isn't just you reading out the number.
Some of it is.
Please tell me the song is you reading out the number.
Some of it
is. If you just sing all 10 digits, we can do the rest programmatically.
Yeah, could do. Or I could just sing 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 times 2. And I could do that 82,489,933 times. And that would be a lovely song, right?
It's like a mass version of the can-can. That's what I'm imagining.
2 times 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 times... No, I'm not doing that. That's not what I'm doing. So you've got this big number, 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 times 2, blah, 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 blah. And then you take 1 off the end, and it's a prime number. It's like magic. It's like, boom, prime number, you've got one. They're obviously a bit harder to find than I've described. So, Matt, you were talking about the appearance of prime numbers in kind of the number line. And yeah. to me, they seem totally random and utterly unknowable. Like, prime numbers just occur, yep. and you can't possibly predict where they are or what they do. But I'm completely wrong about that, am I?
Well, you're correct for certain definitions of all those words.
Okay.
Random, predict, certain.
It's a little bit like the Morecambe and Wise sketch where I've got all the notes, but not necessarily in the right order.
Yeah. Can I answer the question I would like everyone to have?
Yeah.
And that's why, other than it makes for a better song, do we always seem to have these powers of two Mersenne prime numbers as the biggest ever discovered prime? And it's just
yeah,
because
there must be primes in between the Mersenne primes.
Loads.
Why aren't we searching for those?
It's because we've got a really nice primality test called the Lucas-Lehmer test, which only works on Mersenne numbers.
Ooh.
And because it's such a nice, straightforward test, it's like the easiest test to compute. The biggest prime is always one of these primes. And there are other prime numbers we search for, which are big, like Guman primes and all these other ones. But the biggest, because it's just the easiest, nicest test, is always Mersenne primes.
I love that there are some random techniques for finding and testing primes. It's like some kind of clickbait article saying, use this one weird trick to find your biggest ever prime. Like,
primes, one less than a power of two. Hate this weird trick. Yeah.
11 ways to find that prime. Number 7 will really surprise you.
The photo would have someone like rubbing a 4 into their eye or something. And you're like, what is this? The test is based on using the number 4, by the way. So that's technically a very funny joke.
Okay. Oh, hilarious. Much sure more hilarious now you've explained it.
I thought so, yeah.
So back in 2013, I was asked to write a song by a BBC show called More or Less. They asked me to write about the biggest prime ever discovered at the time. And I thought, great, I'll do that. Write this song. That'll be done forever. I'll never have to revisit it again. And I was wrong, because they keep finding new Mersenne primes. So I've had to keep rewriting this song, and I completely blame maths, because it just keeps going. With physics, I'm genuinely worried that one day we're going to run out of physics, but I do not have that stress about maths, because there is always going to be more maths.
Always another prime number. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, exactly. I picked mathematics for its future career stability.
Unless one day we do genuinely find a pattern in the primes, and then we can just predict the next one.
Or we find the last one, you know, we're like, oh, whoops.
Well, that's all the prize.
We got a lot of mistakes to fix. If they just run out and we're like, man, we have misunderstood how these things work.
Hey, but then the upside of that is I won't have to write any more songs about biggest ever prime numbers. So for this song, you have to picture the scene. It is the 21st of December, 2018, and I am sitting at home. I'm wrapping a few presents, opening a few Christmas cards, thinking about making a pint of eggnog for my lunch, and a press release arrives from GIMPS, which is the great internet Mersenne prime search, who are responsible for discovering all the recent Mersenne primes. Right, and this press release changes everything.
The other night, Patrick LaRoche and his computer found a number. Not an ordinary number, but a number that's humongous. So I don't want your mince pies. You can keep your mulled wine. 'Cause all I want for Christmas is the world's biggest prime. It's 2 to the power of 8258993 minus 1. It's Mersenne 51. Bring it with you and boom, a party has just begun. So give me or give me this Christmas time a 25 million digit Christmas prime. It's rarer than a cracker joke that actually makes you laugh. Ha ha! As useful as a pair of roller skates for a giraffe. If I had one, I could do whatever I like with it. Well, anything I want apart from dividing it, except by itself and one. It's 2 to the power of 8258993 minus 1, and if I tried to sing it in hours, I'd need about 6900 and some extra seconds. So give me or give me this Christmas time a 25 million digit Christmas prime. You can type it and text it, or write it and post it, bake it in Stollen, then slice it and toast it. If you can't wrap it and send it in time, I'll take 25 million decimal places of pi. So give me or give me this Christmas time a 25 million digit Christmas prime. One more recursion. Give me, oh give me this Christmas time a 25 million digit Christmas prime.
Lovely stuff. I hadn't heard that before. That's new to
me. Takes me back.
Could you actually give a prime like that? Like physically, if you printed it out, how many pages would it be?
From personal experience? Well, I printed the prime two before that. And
for, it 49. Took 1,000.
I printed prime. Let me just check the list. Yeah, prime 49. And that took 1,490 pages.
Oh, it's less than I thought.
It's not so bad. Double-sided, very small, very small font.
Yeah.
And this new one is only about, the one that Helen was singing is like 10% bigger. You could easily get it in, you know, well under 2,000 pages.
You could easily get it into a well-engineered binder.
Well, I had to print it in three volumes. So I recommend that. If anyone wants to print out tens of millions of digits, just put it in volumes. It's not worth the pain putting it all together.
For ease of flicking through it, because that's obviously what you're going to be doing.
Yeah.
Looking for one that looks like your face.
Yeah.
Exactly.
How amazing would that be if you just flick through and, you know, on page 1,934, there's just a picture of the three of us staring out.
I stopped short of putting an index.
You just have an index where it said one and all the pages where one appears and then two.
It's one of the few books where the index is longer than the text. And actually, I was able to print it because if you know the right people, that press release that Helen mentioned, you can get that a couple of days early. Embargo.
No!
Yeah. I know people who know people. I get hooked up a couple of days. But, oh, what a great few days. I'm just walking around thinking, I know there's a new prime number and no one else does yet. It's pretty special.
That's got to feel good.
So this is the bit where we are primed and ready, not just primed, because there is a Mersenne prime drought happening at the moment. Matt, you're going to have to come and join me with this bit because you know more about this than I do. There's been a big glut of Mersenne primes that have been found, but not since 2018. December 2018, when I rewrote this song, is the last time one was found. And before then, it was 2017, 2016.
Yeah, we've been treated.
We're due one, right? Come on. We're due. An asteroid hitting Earth. There's got to be one soon.
Yeah, exactly. Because they were coming at us one a year for a while there. But that came off the back of another previous drought. So we found one in 2008. Strictly speaking, we found one in 2009, but that was backfilling. It was like a smaller one than the other ones we had found. And actually, your song, Helen, is currently the 51st Mersenne Prime, and is the 51st discovered, but we haven't checked all the ones smaller than that. So there's still a chance it'll be bumped up to be like the 52nd or 53rd Mersenne Prime as we discover ones below it. We're only exhaustive up until the 48th. 49, 50, and 51, their rankings could move around depending on what we discover in the future.
That's fine because the line Mersenne 51 doesn't rhyme with anything. So I could just flip that out and stick in Mersenne 52 if another one gets discovered just below.
What about scanning, though? What about the number of syllables? Would you be screwed if it was...
Yeah, it would be fine. As long as it's not 57, we're going to be fine.
Okay. I think we're pretty safe. I don't know how many have to be checked, but I think you're okay. If you're just looking at like record-breaking primes, we had a drought between the middle of 2008. So we found one in August 2008 and then nothing until January 2013. So that's a good, 4.5 year gap where we had nothing. And then there's another medium gap. There was like 3 years between the one in 2013 to the one in 2016. And after that, we were spoilt one a year. And now it's been 3 years with nothing. So it's not a record-breaking gap, but I think we all got a bit complacent And now it's had this 3-year drought. Well, the reason we have the droughts is because the next one up is so much bigger than the previous ones. So on one hand, it's disappointing because we haven't had any new primes. But on the flip side, when we do find one, it's going to be another substantial increase. So the previous 3-year gap, it jumped from being about 13 million digits to 17 million digits. And then after 17 million, we jumped right up to 22 and a bit million. Then the next three are like 22 and a bit, 23 and a bit, 24 and a bit. You're like, oh, come on. So historically and logically, the next one, the one that breaks the drought, will be substantially bigger again. And we're all waiting for when we hit a prime with more than 100 million digits. That's like the next major goal. It's not going to be that big, but it will be a big jump in the right direction.
Why are there these gaps where we find them later, the Mersenne primes later? Is it because you do a quick check that fails, but you could do a deeper check?
It's because they're done via a distributed computing project. So the Great Internet Mersenne Prime Search, anyone can run the software at home. So actually finding them is easy in that you push a button and a program runs. And then it checks numbers. I mean, the chance that you find it is obviously quite small unless you're running lots of computers or whatever the case may be. And so I had a machine for a while. I need to plug it back in again. I had a prime server just trying to find prime numbers because I was like, wow, wouldn't that be amazing if I found one?
But that's what's interesting about this one is that this one was found by the little guy. Because often they are found by professors at universities or people who are working with servers and maths, and like they've got a whole field full of servers working towards finding these primes. But this guy, he's an IT professional who had been working for about 4 months of running a server to find a prime. And on the fourth attempt, he found one. And this is considering that some people have been running the GIMPS program to find primes for about 20 years and have not hit any jackpots whatsoever. 4 months in, this guy's first attempt to find some primes, and he got
lucky
one. But this is why when they publish the primes, they never just say it's been found by, you know, whoever it was that happened to be running the program at the time. They always say, oh, that person's name plus the people who created the search thing in the first place. Plus, they always add et al. At the end to indicate everyone who had fruitlessly been searching for primes the whole time and had done nothing but eliminate the incorrect guesses and left the real primes to be picked off by people who'd only been running a server for 4 months. So it's quite a nice community that everyone is a part of, because you've got to rule out the ones that aren't primes. That's as important as finding the ones that are primes, isn't it?
And when you hand out blocks of numbers, like if you start running the software, your computer goes to the server and says, hey, can I dib some numbers? And the server's like, yeah, sure, here's the number. Look at this one. But then when do you reassign that number if you never hear back from that computer? Like, are they still crunching it, or do you give it to someone else, or what? And so it's not like we're just sequentially ticking them off. It's a messy, complex network of people with different numbers of computers all around the world. There was one guy, Curtis Cooper, who just had all the computers at their university running the software. And so they found a bunch.
He was the person who I sang about in the 2013 Mersenne 48 version of the same song. So yeah, I know Curtis and his work. But yeah,
and Curtis found the one after that too. He was, you know, all over it.
It's interesting that the largest known prime keeps getting succeeded, but the smallest known prime, like, no one's really made headway on that, you know?
I think you found a gap in the market, Steve.
Yeah. It's just been two for ages. I don't know.
Steve's like, hey, everyone, I discovered -3. Smallest known prime.
Steve, I feel like you're desperately trying to get a song written about you, and it's just, I'm not going to take the bait. I'm not going to do
it. Is it that obvious?
That's the end of this episode. So everyone, stand down until next time.
Thanks for listening. We do love making this podcast, but not as much as we love being part of the Acast Creator Network, which we are part of now.
So true. And if you're ready for more detail, our show notes have loads of links to stuff like my face in a prime number, a free download of Helen's song, and a photo of Steve doing an impression of a slow loris doing an impression of a cobra.
It's a bit like that. You can also click the subscribe button on your podcast app to get new episodes as soon as they're released. You'll also find all of Series 1 in the same place.
And if you want to get in touch about anything to do with the podcast, find us on all the social medias or email us podcast@festivalofthespokennerd.com. Until next time, bye!
Bye!
Bye! A podcast of Unnecessary Detail is made by Festival of the Spoken Nerd. That's Helen Arney, Steve Mould and Matt Parker. Our series producer is Lindsay Fenner, who also produced this episode. Our theme music is by Howard Carter, and we are proud to be part of the Acast Creator Network. Thanks for listening.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.